Go ahead and call the meeting of Community Regional Affairs to order. It is 1:35 PM on May 1st, 2006. Presented are Senator Ellis, Senator Wagner, Senator Gary Stevens, and myself, Senator Stedman. We do have a quorum today. We have three bills and we're going to take up and hopefully we'll move all three of them forward to the next committee of referral. Under old business, we didn't have a quorum to move House Bill 278 pension obligation bonds from committee. At this time, I'd like to entertain a motion.
Mr. President, I move that we move out CS for House Bill 278 rules with the attached fiscal note. Is there a fiscal note?
And individual.
And individual recommendations.
Thank you. Hearing no objections, we'll move that bill to finance, which is next committee of referral. Under new business today, we have on our agenda two bills. House Bill 378, Chilkat Bald Eagle Preserve Advisory Council. I think that'll be the shortest bill today. And then we'll follow that up with House Bill 133, Municipal Boundary Changes. And if we could have Representative Thomas come forward, and if he needs backup from his staff.
Thanks. Good morning, or good afternoon, Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Representative Bill Thomas from District 5. HB 378 is a bill to give a seat back to the borough in Haines. When the bill was created in 1982, or the Bald Eagle Preserve was created, there were 12 seats available. Two of those were to the city, one to the borough. Since then, the Haines and city and the borough have consolidated, and leaving the city mayor's position open. After consultation with the Haines Borough, they've decided the best is to pick a person off the Haines Borough and put them on the committee and preserving the municipality seats. So we have no problem with that. So the municipality or the borough now will pick the seat and be presented and brought forward and given to the governor to be put on the advisory board. Pretty simple, straightforward, and they didn't want to see any other interest groups in there. And one of the things that's required, though, is a person they picked, preference will be given to one who is not currently represented in the Bald Eagle Preserve Advisory Board through membership or anything else, because Haines is rather small, and so hopefully they can find somebody that doesn't have an interest.
Well, Representative Thomas, I assume that the city of Haines is behind this because you represent
Senator, City of Haines is gone now, so the borough, and we worked with the borough mayor and the managers on this, and about half the people in Haines.
Okay.
And I think even the department, they're online. But
okay. Do we have any questions of Representative Thomas? Senator Stevens.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thomas, I served on the committee as a ex officio member, which means you can't vote. They let you talk, but you can't vote. Was the mayor also ex officio that is being replaced? And that's satisfactory to you. You don't mind having a person there who can't vote.
Right, that's the way it's been.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you. Let's go ahead and hear from Jerry Lewinsky, the State Parks, if he has any comments.
Nothing other than both the department and I, division director, actually support this somewhat of a house cleaning measure to make the Bald Eagle Preserve Board their whole. So I think it's a good idea.
Okay, and could you please identify yourself for the record?
Again, my name is Jerry Lewinsky, director of State Parks for Alaska.
Okay, thank you. And I'd like the record to show that Senator Kukesh has arrived. And do we have any public testimony. Anybody want to come forward and speak? Bald Eagle Reserve. Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back to the table. And if there's, is there any other questions or comments? And could we have them?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move this out from the CSR Hospital 378 /X with individual recommendations and no attached fiscal notes.
Okay, thank you, committee.
Do you have any objections? Okay. Excuse me, there is one fiscal note.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So we'll make sure we attach that.
The attached fiscal note. Right.
Okay, we'll go ahead and move that from committee.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Thomas. And one of these days, I'd like to get up to your neighborhood and check out the Bald Eagle Preserve. I think they come down from your neck of the woods to Sitka in the spring.
Right, they come back in the fall.
Yeah.
Thank you.
With that, we'll go on to a public hearing. And after we have a presentation from Rep. Coghill on House Bill 133, Municipal Boundary Changes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate you hearing this bill. It's been a work in progress. The Local Boundary Commission has a charge, both constitutionally and statutorily, to help organize areas in Alaska and to change boundaries. And I have learned a great appreciation for their work, believe me. There have been many, many tense moments in having the discussion. But one of the things that I started asking as I, number one, came to the legislature, and secondly, started looking at how local governance happened, the premise that I start from is I'd like to see government from the bottom up as much as possible. We have a constitution that has the language for local government at its closest to home. So I start off with the fairness issue. The Boundary Commission also has been given a charge that is supposed to look from a statewide perspective for local governance, and those things get into tension a lot, and rightfully so. But I like to defer to the people at home as much as possible and still try to move forward on local governance. So with that, part of it is, how do you include people in the public process? And so this House Bill 133 starts with the issue of getting people involved in the local governance. And so you'll look on page 1, section 1, the Boundary Commission, before amending a petition or impose conditions, must provide public notice for each proposed amendment and condition, an opportunity for the public comment. One of the big disconnects, in my view, in Alaska has been the hangover from the forced burralization in some areas and the idea of expanding boundaries without the public comment. So I think that Section 1 is absolutely necessary, and in Section 2 is adding a new section that asks for two public hearings in a proposed incorporation area. I think that's where you're going to see the new fiscal note that just came out today talks about that, and I'd like to speak to that some. Section 3 deals with an issue that became clear to me as you watched boroughs try to annex areas, that there are certain areas where people don't want to be annexed. And the Boundary Commission, in their regulatory scheme, set up a thing where they said with an aggregate vote, an area can be annexed. Well, the aggregate vote says any big area can automatically always overtake a smaller area just by aggregating that vote. And I think you have, in fairness, you have to let those people who are going to be in the annexed area have a chance to vote and voice their opinion. So in Section 3, proposed annexation must be approved by a majority of votes on the question cast by voters residing in the annexed municipality. So to me, it's a matter of fairness. And I think it's just giving people a say. Government on the local level should start from the local level coming up. So, and then in order to make sure that the statutes are where we keep the process clean and fair, in my view, at least in a public policy arena, leaving it to the legislature rather than to the local boundary commission. So regulations and procedures in Section 4 I'm requiring to be subject to Title 29, which I think is very, very important. They have a constitutional responsibility. I'm not going to dispute that. But we also have a constitutional responsibility, and I think we need to exercise it here. So, and with that, the fiscal note comes forward today saying that that public comment would require more money. It just seems to me that they should already be doing that. And if they're not doing that, then it just shows the need for this particular law. And I just think there's been a typo in the way they've typed it up. I'm sure that's not $10 million travel and $1 million contractual. I think that must be $11,000 total. I'm hoping that's true. The way I normally read those fiscal notes, it looks rather large to me. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll be glad to try to answer any questions.
They may be suffering from PPT, after effect, used to big numbers or something. I don't know. This is a general comment on public participation. I think most of us here have served in the local level and certainly appreciate the ability that the public has to come forward when it's made available, and it should be made available more often than it is. As an example, last year in the legislature, we dealt with a bunch of land transfers where there should have been more public access at the community level. And it looks like your bill would ensure that, forcing the committee, the LBC, to go to the remote communities and sit down with them and have a public hearing. Is that interpretation correct?
Yes, it is. Exactly where I'm getting at. The Model Borough Act that the Local Boundary Commission has been working off of has been complained about because it's rigid, and the lack of public comment in formulating it, but then even the lack of comment, public comment when it comes time to implement. So I think we need to step back and start listening to the people.
Do we have any questions? Senator Stevens.
Mr. Chairman, I think I understand this, Mr. Chairman. But right now, make sure I'm correct, right? I certainly appreciate what you're saying on public comment. The issue of what is the law right now is that the area, an area that's being proposed to be annexed or detached, has a vote. If you are an area outside a community, you now have the right to vote before you'd be annexed, right? I think that's what it says, John. And right. And your change is that you would say that the greater municipality would also have the right to vote on annexation. I think that's what you're saying. And so my real question is, just if you'd add, Representative, if you could sort of comment on this. I know that the goal of the Constitution, which fortunately your father was a part of writing, the goal is the ultimate boroughization of the entire state. It seems to me that this sort of throws sand in the wheels of that. Is that true or not?
On the contrary, Senator, I think that what this does is it puts the responsibility where it truly belongs, and that's with people locally. I think the tension that we have is we have a boundary commission, certainly set up by the Constitution, properly so, and statutory scheme that puts it in motion. But as you all know, most of the proposals have ended up in court. And I think a lot of that is because the public hasn't been involved in it to the degree that they should. And so this one asserts the legislative authority under Section 2 of this bill. We cite Article 10, Section 12 of the Constitution, showing that we have the right by law to assert the local governance issue in concert with the Local Boundary Commission. So the change in this section is from one public hearing to two public hearings. And it seems like a small change, but it's a big change. So it's just in any boundary change annexation issue, I think you have to involve the public.
So let me make sure I have this right, Mr. Chairman. In no way do you see Jack Coghill being offended in any way by what you're doing here today.
Haven't personally asked him.
Okay.
Although I did go back and I have a very extensive reading of the record of the Constitutional Convention, and I think I'm well within the bounds of their intent on this.
Any other questions? Yeah, we'll go to the Daryl Hargraves, the LBC. Are you off now?
Commissioner Stedman, this is Daryl Hargraves, Chair of the Local Boundary Commission. I'm not able to hear you very well. Is there some way for somebody to turn the volume up a little?
I can speak a little louder and into the mic.
That helps tremendously. I didn't hear anything you said except my name.
I didn't say.
I hear anything. The rest of it.
I didn't say anything derogative. So go ahead. Go ahead with your testimony.
Chairman Stedman, members of the committee, I am not truly prepared for a full statement or testimony today. May I inquire whether the written statement I put out an hour ago got to the members of the committee?
Yes, it did. The one dated May 1st, 2006?
That's correct.
Yes, that is.
I think that says most of what is on our minds right at this moment. Been pretty busy, and I hadn't realized that this bill was coming up for a hearing. As I stated in the written statement here, the commission did object and did not support an earlier version of this bill. And I think that with the sponsor and some other backers' support, there have been some considerable improvements made to the original bill. However, we do have some continuing concerns. First off, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I guess my personal biggest concern is that this bill may not be doing for the sponsor and for the supporters what they think it is doing. And then secondly, whether or not that's really in the best interest of the state overall. I believe it's, and I haven't had a chance to review that bill this morning, but I believe it's Section 3, the aggregate vote versus vote in each of the two sections that are in a petition. I think we need to understand that most annexations will always come with initial objection on the part of people in the area being annexed. That's pretty common. That doesn't mean that the borough or city that's trying to annex it is wrong to want to get it into their boundaries so that they can tax and do other planning for it that may be the current situation is adversely affecting that borough or city. It may be totally appropriate to do that annexation. And yet a vote in the aggregate would never allow that to happen. We've seen instances of that. And generally, once it is completed and once the annexation occurs, it becomes, over a period of time, recognized as the appropriate thing to do. We have in the near past one situation, one community that annexed an area outside that there was loud objection to it. In the hearing process and after they organized with the new area in the municipality, it became apparent that that was the correct decision. people in the annexed area got on the council. People in the annexed area began to see the benefits of being in the annex, in the city proper. The outcome of that, true enough, has been that, you know, it only takes one person to take things to court. And in that instance, you've had a couple of people that have continued to fight it. I think one of those people don't even live in the annexed area. They can take it to court, and they can object to that annexation. And yet it stands on the record that the annexed area is for the large part at this point, very supportive, and they welcome what has transpired in their community. So I think that just keep in mind from a state perspective that you can have the nooks and crannies off the side of a city or borough that just simply don't want to be annexed. You will never get a vote that will get a majority of vote from that population. And yet it could be, for that city and borough, that in fact could be the best situation. It could almost be a required situation, because those areas outside of the organized municipalities very often do draw upon the services of the larger organized borough or city. So just be sure that the aggregate vote is in fact what we really think is going to be the best thing for everyone when it happens. There's another point in this that I need to speak to, and it simply has to do with the cost. I was surprised this morning to see there was no fiscal note to it. And to Mr. Coghill, I certainly think there could be a typo in that, so you may have spotted a problem. I don't have it in front of me right now, but I think that what we see is that oftentimes hearings, the extension of hearings, can at least cost the travel of commissioners. We're not paid. But, of course, there are expenses in traveling and publication and things like that. So $10,000 or $11,000 sounds about right when it comes to extending hearings. The point being that there must be some cost to that. And when I saw a zero fiscal note, I was a little surprised. So it's likely that there is a cost to that. I think that there are some good intentions in this bill and in the effort that's been made to put it together, but I'm really concerned that it may not be doing what the sponsors and the supporters, quite frankly, might think that it's doing.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Hartgrave, any questions for him? Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Could I ask Darrell a question?
Sure.
Mr. Hargraves, this is Gary Stevens. Frankly, I got a little confused as you were talking there. Maybe you could clarify this. I mean, the current law says that allows for a majority vote of the voters residing in the area proposed to be annexed or detached. So the area that's thinking of coming in, or the bigger area may be looking at them being attached or annexed, the vote would only take place currently under law in that area, if I understand this right. And the change that this proposal makes is that there be a vote in what you're referring to as the aggregate. Is that correct?
Well, that's my understanding. Now, Mr. Buckhorst should be online with us, and he can speak to the specifics of that. But as it stands right now, a majority vote of the total can allow an annexation. And this bill, and tell me if that's not what I recall in the bill, but it would require a majority vote in the area to be annexed.
I think we're getting mixed up here. I think you're just backwards. Mm-hmm. What you're saying is just backwards of the way I'm reading it, that right now the area to be annexed, the smaller area, has to have a majority vote. This bill would say that the larger area has to also have a majority vote. And So I guess my question, Darrell, is what's wrong with that? Why wouldn't give me some examples of why a larger area would vote against annexing an outside area? Why would they do that?
Okay, I think that you've hit on the point that is of concern to me personally, that whether or not this language does what the sponsors intend it to be. In listening to past testimony and in discussions, I've picked up that the intent is to try to get it set up so that the area being annexed would have to vote, and they would have to vote to do it. The larger municipality would have to vote also to do it. Now, it would take both votes to make it happen. As it stands right now, of course, annexation can take place by a vote of the aggregate. The two together would prevail.
Rep. Coghill, you'd like to respond, please?
That's what I'm getting at. Certainly you want the people in an annexing municipality to have a majority vote because they're going to take on responsibility, but you also want those who are in the annexed area to have a say. And this puts them in tension rather than saying the big populous area always gets to overrule the small populous area. So,
and Mr. Chairman, to the sponsor of the committee, is the sponsor's intent that the area being annexed would have to vote in the affirmative in order to be annexed?
Well, I don't know, Mr. Hargrave. He wasn't quite done yet. He was still finishing his comments.
I'm sorry.
You could go ahead, Rep. Coghill.
The language in statute already says that the annexed area or the proposed annexed area has to vote in the affirmative to be annexed. This puts the annexing municipality also in the place where they have to vote. And the reason I went down that road is because I just totally disagreed with the aggregate vote issue, but you want both the responsible parties to agree. And that would require a public campaign that would say, is it in the best interest of this local area? Rather than leaving it up to just the local boundary commission only, you're leaving that up to the people. And if you do the aggregate vote as has been put in statute or in regulation, I don't think you get there fairly. By giving both sides a chance to vote on it, you have create a public dialogue. And so that way everybody's involved in it.
Any other questions? Senator Kukesh.
Just let me see if I get this right. It looks to me like there's a two-step process if your language gets adopted. The first step would be the municipality that would like to annex someplace would have to vote within their boundary first. If they vote within their boundary, then they can go out and try to annex a new area, but then they would also have a vote after that to see whether or not they want to be annexed or not.
That's the
first vote fails in the municipality that wants to do the annexation, then nothing happens.
True. That's how I envision
it. If the first vote passes, the municipality that's going or the area that's going to be annexed, the majority of those people have to agree to that. And if they don't, then it kills it there. So there's two ways to stop an annexation if your language is adopted.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions here at the table? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hartgraves. We'll go to Don Brockhorst.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Dan Bockhorst. I serve as staff to the Local Boundary Commission. I'm principally here to answer questions. There were a couple of points that were raised I'd like to address with your permission. First of all, with regard to the fiscal note, I apologize, but that is indeed an error. It was supposed to, as the chairman of the commission indicated, reflect $11,000 in estimated fiscal impact. The other point I would like to stress is that, I'm not sure it's clear, but under the existing laws that govern the process relating to local boundary commission matters, there is already very broad opportunity for public input, in particular with regard to three different venues. Once a petition is filed with the local boundary commission, there is extensive public notice given of that filing, and individuals have a minimum of 7 weeks to submit written comments and responsive briefs either in opposition to or in support of the proposal. The statutes require this agency as staff to the Local Boundary Commission to prepare a report on the proposal and to investigate the proposal, to make findings and recommendations to the Local Boundary Commission. And we publish that report and solicit public comment on that report. And so individuals are given, under the law, a minimum of 4 weeks to submit written comments regarding the findings and conclusions and recommendations of the staff regarding the proposal. Third is the formal public hearing by the Local Boundary Commission. The commission, under current law, is required to hold public hearings in or near any area proposed for annexation. And there is extensive opportunity during the course of the public hearing for comment. So again, just to summarize, there is already extensive opportunity, and this would, of course, expand that further, that in the event that the Local Boundary Commission does decide to make amendments or to add conditions, that further hearings would be required. If the commission decides to present a legislative review, borough incorporation, multiple hearings would be required. The other point I would like to make, Mr. Chairman, is that Representative Coghill, I think, makes a good point, and Senator Stevens raised the same point about protecting and ensuring the interests of the local voters within the existing municipal government. And it seems to me that in that vein, that there is no provision here for similar treatment of those interests or respect of those interests with regard to detachments. The way the bill is currently worded, it would require voters in the existing municipality to agree to an annexation, but say, for example, an area of that same municipality were proposed to be detached, then the voters in the area proposed for detachment would have an opportunity to vote, but the residents and voters in the existing municipality would not be accorded a similar respect or treatment. And the last point I would like to make is that in regard to the processes that are used for municipal annexation, there are a number of different procedures. Election methods are among them, but there's also the legislative review process. And the legislative review process is set out in the Constitution under Article 10, Section 12, and it provides that the decisions in those cases are rendered by the Local Boundary Commission and then the state legislature. There is no opportunity for voter participation. And if, to the extent that more and more hurdles are placed with regard to municipal boundary changes in voting involving voter participation, I think that it will perhaps shift more and more proposals into the legislative review arena and bringing that issue without any participation by voters. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would be glad to try to answer any questions that might arise.
Thank you. Senator Wagner.
Before going further, I just want to say something in support of what Representative Coghill is trying to do here. I may be the only person on this committee who has sat through hearings on annexation of areas to municipality. And the reason the one I sat through didn't happen was because there was no ability for the people that were being annexed to vote up or down on being annexed to the city I represented as mayor. So I think this is a very good fix, and I'm going to be in favor of it. That's all I'll say.
Thank you. Senator Wagner.
Mr. Chairman.
Rep. Coghill.
One of the interesting things, the way the Local Boundary Commission was set up in our Constitution, was we only have a right to reject. And so I think it's speaks to the reason for the public dialogue to be very genuine and very thorough before we get to that place in the legislature where we actually reject a proposal from the Boundary Commission. So It's kind of one of those interesting places in our Constitution where, rather than the affirmative, we just vote in the negative. And so before we get into that public legislative process, I would like to see the public process at the local level done. And I understand it becomes a little more arduous, but as we see down here, sometimes the arduous manner of getting legislation through hammers out some of the details. I think bringing people together in those circumstances under two public hearings is totally appropriate.
And we have a gal from Homer, Doris Cabana, if she's online, if she could identify herself. And
yes, my name is Doris Cabana, and I was in the working on the annexation down here, and I'd like to testify on this. It sounds all and good for some of the things that's been said by the Boundary Commission and it passed past Boundary Commission, but it doesn't answer a lot of our questions. It didn't seem to matter if there were public meetings or not for example, like Homer annexation, if the Boundary Commission ignored the voters' comments. They did as they pleased. Some of the people fell asleep on one of the final meetings, had typewritten papers already written up on what to happen. We didn't get to have voters' approval, which we didn't get. It's still the sore spot here. All we got was more taxes in city, no new services in my area. We didn't already get from trooper service. It never got to come up to the whole legislature, but held up in a committee by our area rep, who was quite biased at the time. And the time of the, I think it was 45 days, it got held up, and then it never got to the whole legislature, and so it automatically becomes law. Now, that is wrong as far as I'm concerned. And let me just get my facts straight here. Our then legislature, his own property was exempt by going around it in that annexation area, by holding it in committee till time ran out and then became law, should be stopped also. This is no vote of the people also. As an example, it was not justice and cost those of us to take it to court, and we're still paying lawyer fees. We did stop it at from the 25 square miles to less than 4.58 square miles that benefited many. It cost us that paid dearly and still paying those fees. It did help a lot of people by cutting that down. It's still in court, in the Superior Court in Anchorage. It's still not done, and it will be taken to Supreme Court. And that's how the people down here feel about it.
Doris?
Yes?
From Sitka, it's up here.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
I said from Sitka, Juneau is up. We got a large state. I'm just teasing you a little bit. You're doing just fine. Keep going in your comments.
Well, I just think that ours was, as far as I was concerned, was illegal. It's cost us dearly down here because, I mean, those of us that had to take it to court, it's been a very expensive thing. But I would like to see it fixed so that at least the vote of the people wouldn't be ignored. And I mean, for people to fall asleep in a meeting and they already had typewritten paper, that kind of burnt me up for one thing.
So Doris, you support the bill?
I support it wholly if the voters get a vote on it. I just don't think that the local Boundary Commission should have that kind of power.
Okay. Thank you. Do we have any questions for Mrs. Cabana? Thank you for your testimony. That concludes the off-net. And if there's anybody here in the audience that would like to come forward and speak, If you could please identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mark Hickey. I'm here today representing the Lake and Peninsula Borough, and we are in strong support of House Bill 133. And I just wanted to take a minute and speak to Section 3 in particular, because that's a particular interest to us. And I think the committee has the correct understanding along the lines of what Senator Kukish outlined as to how it would work. It adds a step. And again, this is a local action annexation or detachment. There's still legislative review action that could occur, but in a local action, it requires that in addition to having an affirmative vote from the area being annexed, you have an affirmative vote from the annexing municipality. And we are living proof of the benefit or the need for this provision. Lake and Peninsula Borough formed about 17 years ago. We're in southwest Alaska, about 1,700 is our population. We have an area to the west that's unorganized that has been identified in a number of model borough boundary studies as an area. It's the Dillingham-Nooshkak River drainage area that could on its own be its own borough. And we've had at least two occasions where annexation proposals have come from that area. I would characterize it as a hostile takeover, attempting to annex into the Lake and Penn borough and create what amounts to a super borough. Well, under local action today, people in Lake and Penn have no vote. Under this change, we would have to be prepared to have that happen. They would have to be prepared to have it. We would have to be prepared to have it. We think that's reasonable. We elected to organize. We've been making our local school contribution. It's not easy with some of the fish price issues and those things, but we're still there. So we think that's an important change. You still have an option to do legislative review if it's necessary to, for the interest of the state, to do something that the vote might not otherwise support. But what this is doing, it doesn't require aggregate. It requires that we have an equal say, and they think that's important. So that's another variation where we could actually have and the process allows a different party to petition for annexation. It more often is the municipality, but it's not always the area in this case that's essentially being asked to take over an area that our area is not it's not our idea. It's not something that we support. So it's something else just to throw in the mix for you to think about.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Hickey? Senator Stevens.
Well, I appreciate what Mr. Hickey said. Help me with this, though, Mark, because if I believe Dillingham is considerably bigger, more population than Lake and Penn. So under this new arrangement, first, under present law, the local area of Dillingham would vote on it. And then the wider area, which includes Lake and Penn plus the Dillingham area, would vote on it. Hmm. Correct me there.
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, I think that's incorrect. Under Section 3, the requirement under 1 is that that annexation, if it's a local action, must be approved by a majority of votes cast by voters residing in the annexing municipality. So it had to be a majority of the existing municipality, the Lake and Penn, that would have to approve. And under what is now 2, existing language on lines 18 through 20, would also have to be approved by the new area proposing that would be annexed. So yeah, right now what happens is we have no vote under local action. What we think as far as the statute is irrelevant. Now we get to participate in the process, and hopefully there's a hearing in our area. But right now, the only people in a local action that would have to approve is the area to the west. It's not in our borough. And it is a population of 2,500. So an aggregate vote doesn't help us either, because essentially we're outnumbered. And it just seems, particularly an area that's done what the state wants to see, a rural area of the state that's organized, should have a fair say in something that significant. That It's really a to me almost a loophole to be able to use the annexation provision to do what amounts to a consolidation, or as I like to describe it, a hostile takeover. But this one says we have to approve in our borough.
Right. I see what you're saying, and that's exactly right.
Yeah. It's easy to the chair misread it.
Any other questions? Anybody else would like to come forward and speak? Rep. Coghill, would you like in wrap up? Would you like to make any comments?
I think the issue's been fairly vetted.
Do we have a motion?
Mr. President,
Do we have any other comments? No comments? Okay, any motions?
Mr. President, I move that we move this on to the next committee, and that is a / 1RI-A with the attached corrected fiscal note of $11,000 on $11 million and individual recommendations.
Okay. Any objection? Hearing no objections, we'll move this bill forward to the next committee of referral. And I will mention to the chairman to see if she can't have a hearing on this, because I know we're in the later hours of the session.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
On Friday, there will be a joint Senate Hess meeting to hear the presentation from the U.S. Ambassador to Mongolia, Pamela Saltz. The presentation will deal with education, tourism, trade, mining, and government. The presentation is supposed to be short, so we may reconvene to hear other bills. But we'll keep you updated, and if we don't reconvene, we're getting to the end. I'd like to thank the ladies of the CNRA committee for all the work they've done, and thank them for
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, I got carried away.
That's okay. for all the help in coming to the meetings for the last couple of years. And to the trusty staff aide, Kim, and the past chairman and his aide and work in the transition that we made was smooth from one chairman to another, which we seem to pass the chair back and forth in this committee a little bit. With that, thank everybody, and meeting adjourned.